Card B of session number 46, recorded on July 23rd, 2007. We're looking at the first chart of Bob Marshall, the top-down chart, as shown in the chart and image archive on the fivebody.com site. Scott, I would say this is that what Bob Marshall is trying to show here is an ecology. And ecology is the interaction of things visible and invisible. And the figures are visible actions across the society, and the ground that's the basis of the ecology at that time, which is the phonetic alphabet and papyrus, the ecology of that evoking the figures of Christ as popular art form, Plato and Aristotle, highbrow art form, spoken word as a technological art form, the tribe as a popular archetype, and the family as ghetto, and Caesar running amok.
Yeah. In what form do we see spoken word as technological art form during this period?
That's Plato and Aristotle, who McLuhan said turned the oral form into an art form. That was the programmed environment of the dialogues, Socratic dialogues. It was a conscious, manipulated drama.
Yeah.
And then Christ is going around talking about the
Logos. Well, I see him as being spoken word. I see Plato and Aristotle as being, you know, they're writing it all down. They're visual space.
Yeah, but that's the hidden ground. They're writing it down. They're part of the effect of the phonetic alphabet. And you could juxtapose their secular people, and they're writing it down, but Jesus doesn't write anything down. He's doing the oral. So you have that complementary dialectic between what Christ was doing, preserving the old values of the spoken word effect, and representing tribal values of sharing, not the competitive world of industry or markets or whatever you want to call that early form of individualist empire that Rome was.
Yeah. Well,
so Christ is the oral art form, and Plato is the written art form, but its content is the oral form.
Right. So can we say Jesus was the last man alive before the early stages of the android meme?
Yeah. McLuhan said that all matter was reconstituted at the time of Christ, you know, by the action of Christ.
All matter? What the hell does that mean?
Well, we'll go into another time. If you got the book, The Medium and the Light, he talks about it in there.
No, I keep meaning to get a hold of that. That's a good one.
Yeah, and he talks about his sort of new theology. He was recommending the church make this statement. And it's a complex thing. Let's not get into it now.
Well, all matter, say that all matter is reconstituted. Are we saying that all matter is, in a sense, language, and language is being transformed, or?
Yeah, all technologies, everything. The whole logos that humans lived inside of, which is what I was saying, is that Christ was reestablishing the oral form of the logos, or the idea of the logos. He was the logos manifested.
Yeah.
He also represented tribal values. So he's a combination of the popular archetype of tribe and the divine family, which was ghettoized, and he revitalized it, tried to, at least his image did, his historical legacy. And he was a popular art form. But he was well-versed in the highbrow knowledge, supposedly.
Yeah, well, he was a rabbi. I'm sure he knew all Kabbalah and everything.
And everything else.
Yeah, he kind of represented, you know, the man, the autonomy of the individual, the ability to sort of be free in a sense, and not necessarily under the rule of the Caesar.
Yeah.
So, but visual space autonomizes the individual as well. But
right. So that's the ground. And so McLuhan used to talk about why did the logos show up at the time of visual space? Because McLuhan suggested that it was a permanent medium, was going to be around for thousands of years. So it was a good medium to preserve his message.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas pre-literate oral poets or semi-literate oral poets, their stuff came and went. Nobody wrote it down. Nobody hears it again.
Right.
So he wanted to put his message in a permanent, more permanent medium. So he shows up at the beginning of visual space.
Oh, and McLuhan thinks of Christ and the Logos as being kind of synonymous?
Yeah, well, that's what Christians believe, don't they? In the beginning was the Word. Word was the Logos. The Logos was the Greek term, you know, for their cosmos.
Right.
And then Christianity is built on Hebrew and Greek culture.
Mm-hmm.
Hebraic and Hellenic. The two H's, Hebraic and Hellenic. Hellenic, H-E-L-L-E-N-I-C, referring to the Greek civilization after Alexander the Great. The declining Greek civilization as Rome rose.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's worth mentioning before we move on that with Plato and Aristotle lumped together under the highbrow art form, seems like we spend a year and a half on your book making fine distinctions between Plato and Aristotle and distinguishing how they both led to different evolutions in language and technology.
In visual space.
In visual space. But here, for the sake of this early primitive chart, we're just putting them both in the same category.
Right, right. Now, these are more general effects. I mean, they were different within their concepts, and the concepts were a product of the phonetic alphabet. I mean, Plato's ideas and Aristotle's encyclopedia, that was all within the writing effect. And since the visual space is a divisive medium, a fragmenting, specializing medium, you would have a dialectic in its culture,
mm-hmm.
played out as two threads, two memes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Christ as balancing that off, not involved in the writing world, in the highbrow world.
Yeah.
He was proclaiming in action tribal values. At least that's what McLuhan said, that Christ retrieved tribal values. The values of not being hypnotized so much by property, slavery, ownership, materialism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what...
And I think we mentioned in an earlier discussion about Plato and Aristotle that Plato's visual space was along the vertical axis and Aristotle's visual space was along the horizontal axis.
Yeah. So visual space creates these sense of... planes and interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Primitive man or pre-literate man didn't have these fragmentations. It had multiple spaces, multiple deities, multiple animistic figures. Like every organism created its own space and had its own god. So it was a pluralistic, the hyper-pluralistic universe. Mm-hmm. But when you have visual space, it starts to put everything into a frame. And that frame is an abstract space that people create concepts inside of.
Yeah.
So, the next point...
and the map is not the territory, so I don't know the concepts ever actually literally match what is.
Well, the idea of the map is not the territory comes out of the tradition of nominalism, which is that the sign for an object, written or spoken, is not the object. But the grammatical tradition, grammarian tradition, says that the sign and the object are intimately resonant.
Mm-hmm. So, with spoken word being technological art form in this phase, I imagine during this phase, these categories of the rhetorician and the grammarian are beginning to
be created.
Yeah.
That's spelled out in... McLuhan and Eric's book, his son Eric, that was put out posthumously, Laws of Media. Go to page, I think it's about 124, lays out how the logos, the more oral integrated logos of Greek culture, was fragmented by the time of the Romans, and you had three logi, rhetoric, grammar, and dialectics. So it got fragmented into a trinity.
Right.
So that's the increasingly fragmented effect of visual space. But let's go along to the next two patterns to show the ecology. So, because the details are important, but it's the interplay that Bob Marsh was trying to show. So when you get to print, you have a popular art form, which is theater, and that's one of the major icons of Shakespeare. But what is the highbrow art form of that period? Francis Bacon. right? He founded the Royal Society, or laid the grounds down for modern science. It was changed by Descartes and Newton, but Francis Bacon was the transition point from scholastic knowledge to the new scientific method.
Yeah.
So he's the highbrow art form, and he's continuing that intellectual world of Plato and Aristotle. And
yeah.
What would be the technological art form when the printing press comes in? It would be the manuscript, which was the ground for the phonetic alphabet and papyrus period. And now the popular archetype, as you have the beginning of European imperialism and colonization, and the beginning of towns and cities expanding, and the wealth that the printing press brought in, and the new money economies, printed money economies and coinage, and central banks, the tribe, that becomes a ghetto, because it's older than the village, and the village becomes the popular archetype. And that's just before the Industrial Revolution, when the villages get wiped out and everybody goes to the cities. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sequence, chronological sequence here. And so what is the symptom of the print effect? Well, the major effect was the breaking up of the unified Catholic world, or Christian world, Catholic Empire, and the creation of Luther. And that was a political revolution.
Yeah.
The Protestant Reformation. So then you go
Martin
to the next...
Luther, was it? Is that his full name?
Martin Luther.
Yeah.
So then you see the ecology. You've got Shakespeare in the theater, the global theater, the globe theater. Francis Bacon, who some people think was the one who edited Shakespeare's works after Shakespeare died. I think Bacon was a big factor in there. And so you have Bacon representing secular pagan knowledge, so to speak. Shakespeare, pagan entertainment, even though they were considered Christians. But they're not Christ. They're secular people. And then you have...
And they're actually, because they're manuscript guys, they become content for the hidden ground, which is the print, movable type.
Yeah, yeah. McLuhan said that Shakespeare turned... he looked back and created aesthetic values out of medieval life. So the manuscript or medieval period was turned into an art form by Shakespeare. At least the content of his plays was focused on the medieval period, just as the Romans aestheticized the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
This trend in Western culture is to turn the previous civilization or culture into an art form. So Rome did that to Greece, and the medieval period looked back to Rome, and then the Shakespeare's time, the beginning of the Gutenberg Galaxy, and the beginning of mercantilism had the medieval period as its art form or content. And then in the 19th century, you have as your cultural content aestheticized takes the time of Shakespeare or the Renaissance and the medieval and the Elizabethan period, and turns that into a content art form. And then the 20th century turns the 19th century into an art form, and McLuhan said that's when mechanization took command or became the aestheticized value. So that the content of the 20th century has been mechanization.
Mm-hmm.
So the 21st century will turn the electric effect into an art form.
Mm.
So the ecology here is the village is the popular archetype, the tribe is a ghetto, and that's, in a sense, the beginning of Columbus and European in colonialization wrecks the tribes of North America and Latin America. They're a ghetto.
Uh-huh.
You see?
Yeah.
And another thing, I think another idea about the family being a ghetto, wasn't at the time of Christ the myth or legend or fact was that all the families had to pay taxes?
They were all considered citizens if they weren't slaves, and I assume, yeah, they all paid taxes.
Yeah, and Jesus was born in a manger because family were on a route to paying taxes or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were, Joseph and Mary were on the way to making their annual tribute. So that, in a sense, maybe what Bob Marshall's getting at, family's ghetto. So the tribe is ghetto in general as a result of the print effect. So what becomes the ghetto in the Industrial Revolution phase is the village. The village is a kind of romanticized and comfortable environment at the time of Shakespeare. But 200 years later, the village is wiped out. And one of the famous stories of that is all the Irish villages wiped out in the potato famine, and that whole culture got dispersed around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in the 1840s or so.
Might that be more accurate to say that it got displaced? Because to say it got wiped out almost implies that it didn't exist. But, there were still lots of villages. But the town was becoming the central place where people
right.
were moving.
Right. And the town, it's actually cities in the Industrial Revolution, and the town is the previous phase. So it's the art form or archetype. And the village is, I guess Bob Marshall means it's smaller, is marginalized. That's when it drop out.
Yeah.
Obsolesced in a destructive sense.
Yeah.
And at that time, you had the Luddites running around smashing machines. And the highbrow art form is Darwin for upsetting the Christian metaphor of the great chain of being and all that stuff that evolution obsolesced. And then you had the social revolution of the industrial effect, the socialization of the workers through Marx. And the highbrow art, the popular art form that people could engage and read and experience through novels and newspaper articles, was the main archetype is Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Darwin, Marx, and Dickens, and what becomes the technological art form is the printed book, because it's the time of the newspaper. So you have people starting to write novels more and more.
Yeah.
The time of the Industrial Revolution. Novel becomes a main form of art, or perception, or entertainment.
Yeah, and that's before novel starts breaking up into the newspaper, or the point of view.
No, wait, say that again? I don't think that's right.
Well, the printed book is obsolesced during the Industrial Revolution, so you probably have your novelist.
Well, it's not obsolesced, it becomes an art form. It's obsolesced, but it becomes an art form.
Yeah, and so it becomes, and so you have the Dickens and these guys.
Jane Austen, you have everybody. It's a glorious time for novels,
right.
And for writers.
Yeah. And then in the next phase, in the Electronic Revolution, the book, which represents the point of view, begins to break up into the sort of cubist perspective of the newspaper.
Yeah, which is James Joyce and Ezra Pound and Eliot and Wyndham Lewis, many other styles of art writers, they turned the novel effect into an art form. The novel was the printed book becoming an art form. But then when the printed book is archetype, the novel becomes art form. It becomes changed and updated. Basically, McLuhan said the last novel, the end of the novel cycle, was Joyce's Ulysses, mm-hmm. which was a strange experience for people.
Yeah.
People found it hard to read.
Oh, yeah.
But it was adapting the book form to the new telegraph mosaic.
Yeah. And it didn't really entirely pervade human culture, because people still find Joyce hard to read.
Yeah, not many people. As T.S. Eliot said back then, the literate culture that everybody studied in the universities, you know, after World War II, was made up of about 3,000 people.
Yeah.
That's what Eliot said. You know, at the turn of the 20th century, it was a very small subculture.
So it never became environmental. I don't know if it's fair to call it popular art form.
An art form is not environment. The ground is environment.
Hmm.
The art form can have been a previous environment, like we have spoken word, manuscript, printed book, and newspaper. But they, that time, they're puny compared to the present environment that they're an art form in.
Yeah.
So you see, it follows that we have the city as popular archetype, because now with the Electronic Revolution, you got a global village or the global megalopolis happening. So the city becomes an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And the town becomes a ghetto.
We're using the city as a metaphor for a village in the sense of the global village?
Yeah, the global village can also... Remember, global village is a contradictory phrase. It's a village, but it's global. So how could a village be global? So it's two offices put together to point out something new. And another term for Global Village is the megalopolis.
Yeah.
So the city as a particular identity becomes scattered in the first half of the 20th century. And what are the syndromes of the electric revolution, which retrieves oral space as content, even though electricity is tactile? That's the rise of the mafias. So you have Al Capone as a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy to follow this once you get the pattern.
Why is Al Capone the symptom of the electronic revolution? Because of the decentralization of power?
Decentralization, yeah. The decentralization and cities in crisis and the oral mafia teams taking over the respectable legal written traditions of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
The legal system can't control the mafia,
mm-hmm.
secret society. And it has the advantage of telephones, automobiles, and masses of people to hide in inside the city to create its own wealth base.
Mm-hmm. So
and then to bribe officials.
Right.
So the symptoms are largely political. Is what?
Sure.
Political disturbances. I mean, the Roman Empire, in the time represented by Caesar, that was a new phenomenon. It was a violent phenomenon that supposedly Christ reacted to. Luther was a violent phenomenon, led to all kinds of religious warfares. The Luddites were the serious problem of people being alienated by the new cities and the Industrial Revolution, the disservices of that environment.
Were they actually a sizable in number, the Luddites?
Well, they were a small group, but they smashed up several factories. I don't think it was a widespread movement, but it was something that stood out.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were exported, you know, to Australia, criminalized. And they caused a social turmoil. That's only in...
What was their deal? They just didn't like technology?
They thought the new mechanized cotton mills or whatever that they were up against were taking away their jobs.
Uh-huh.
So they went into the factories, the new industrial factories, and smashed them up.
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah. So Joyce is a popular art form. Einstein and Freud are the highbrow art form. And
right.
Einstein is making new revolutionary distinctions in outer space, and Freud is making new revolutionary distinctions in inner space, defining the subconscious, really.
Right. Right. It's the body, both inner and outer, as art form. Being extended inside the discarnate electric effect.
Yeah, and in the dizzying verbal effect of that is Joyce. And
yeah, the obsolescence of the verbal, strictly verbal, linear, rational, supposedly in quotes, presentation of information.
Right. I'm surprised that didn't start the psychedelic revolution right there, but...
Well, it did. There were a lot of people doing drugs in the 20s.
Oh, but not psychedelics like in the 50s.
Oh, yeah, there was marijuana. They probably didn't have access to mushrooms. Some guy did. Maybe Crowley did or something. Or maybe Nietzsche did.
Well, LSD hadn't been invented yet.
No,
kind of
but there was the natural psychedelics.
Yeah.
But there was a drug culture, according to the Evergreens. Joyce did a lot of, I think it was marijuana.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm sure. Well, yeah, cocaine was prescribed by doctors as medication.
Yeah,
I think
some people say that the 19th century had more drug consumption than what happened in the 1670s.
Oh,
in the population, in general, and that would be the effect of the telegraph, which was 1850 on.
Yeah,
and then drugs were part of the economy, anyways. That's the LaRouche's Dope Inc.
Yeah,
the opium trade from China.
Right. And the
back 1700s.
Government drove it all underground.
Well, tried to, and then the dope kings became the government.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, according to LaRouche, and then through the mafias and that in the 20th century.
Right.
So when you get to the next phase, global theater, now you take a look at show me television in light of what I said. I think it's pretty straightforward now. And anybody can just look at these charts while we're talking and see it, but you see how to read it. You have the technological art form, then the sort of anthropomorphic art forms, popular and highbrow, and then the archetype is older institutions, and the ghetto is the loser in that particular juxtaposition or complex, and then the political symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see in the television age what describe to me what it says. The ecology across the board.
Well, television is the ground.
Yeah.
And then your popular art form, Elvis and Fellini.
Who turns movies into an art form, right?
Yeah. And then your highbrow art form is your existentialism.
Yeah, Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus.
I think Sartre comes a little later. I'm not sure.
No. This is in the 50s.
Oh, okay.
Sartre's big in the 40s and 50s.
Oh, okay.
And Camus is big in that period.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Camus.
Mm-hmm.
So the technological art form.
Radio and movies.
Yeah.
And popular archetype is the nation.
Right. There's not really any nations anymore. The city is becoming a ghetto, and so the image of the nation is brought in, and it's a hologram, so to speak, because the National Security Agency is now saying that the elites can lie to the nation. That's in 1947.
In the meantime, they're busy forming the United Nations as a figure to
for the global village.
For the global village.
And the political disturbance is McCarthyism. And McLuhan used to say that television had a software communist effect, and the literate industrial Americans misinterpreted it as communism.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah. On one of McLuhan's Explorations magazines, came out in 53 to 57, one of the early ones, maybe the second issue, has a mock newspaper page, and it has two politicians pointing their fingers at each other, arguing. And the commentary runs like, here's tribal people flinging names at each other. It's a retrieval of oral culture. That's like calling each other a communist.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that? So what I just said about misinterpreting of communism as an effect of people, creating a tribal image in the American culture, was really caused deeply by the communistic effect of television, because everybody could share the same situation. So it was intellectual software communism.
But radio had that effect too.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of fighting in the 30s. It became very political between the fascists, the communists, the capitalists, and Freemasons, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just that McCarthyism was a notorious phenomenon in the United States, which sort of stood out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could see the Nazis and the communists as different mafias, as in the Capone period during the Electronic Revolution in the 20s.
Hmm. That'd be like to anthropomorphize the media technologies.
Right, and then McCarthyism is dealing with like an identity threat on the whole nation. It's not mafia gangs. Mafia gangs are gangs, and games are being run, but it's one huge Western icon of America against an Asian icon called the Soviet Union, you know, or communism. Starting to have a global theater effect.
Mm-hmm.
What McLuhan called the Cold War, World War III of information icons.
Everybody was afraid that we were going to be invaded by the Russians. We were being invaded by communism. It was a communism of a different kind.
You mean television?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a software communism, and people were still projecting an industrial communism.
Yeah.
And McLuhan said that Britain was communist by 1830, before Marx even got going, because of the general hardware services, newspapers, steamships, roads. That whole early industrial environment was something that anybody could have access to, and it was a service that not one person really could own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So McLuhan called that 19th century hardware communism.
Mm-hmm.
And then radio and TV bring in software communism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and TV is the motor mechanism for fashion making. What is it? I forget.
It's
what it is.
My phrase, yeah.
Yeah. But it's the flip point, because it proliferates the image of the nuclear mushroom cloud, the exclamation mark at the end of linear history when hardware-software flips into software-software, software warfare. That might be worth commenting on.
Yeah, that's what the space between Global Village and Global Theater is indicating. That's the 1945, the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the Global Village becomes the content of a discarnate state, and so all the older media, the phonetic alphabet, the print, the Industrial Revolution media, and Electric Revolution are the content of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they are iconic and actors in the Global Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So you have television, computer, satellite, and the Second Coming as actors, whole environments as actors in the Global Theater. And then their particular contents are the ecology spread across the chart.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Mark McCarthyism, existentialism, Elvis Fellini, radio and movies as art form happening. See, radio as art form in the television area is rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
It's geared to the youth market. And movies is the new wave coming out of France and realism out of Italy. The representation of movie medium with intellectual concepts or stylistic differences. It wasn't a programmed environment as a given invisible effect based on the novel that the movie was in the 20s and 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the next one is obvious.
Well, in what sense does the existentialism hype up the tactile effect of television?
Well, existentialism is living by percept, not concept. It was a conceptualization of living by percept. So the central nervous system has been extended, both left and right hemisphere are numbed, so people live in a an experiential hunger.
Mm-hmm.
They exist, they have new chemical body experiences because it's the only relief from any environment to the numbing state of the discarnate effect of television.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that we...
So it's a question of, just like taking the word out of context, it's a question of do you exist or not?
Mm-hmm.
McLuhan used to say in the 50s, is there life before death?
Mm-hmm. Implying what?
Oh, there's no life possible until you die.
Hmm. Metaphorically?
Yeah, I mean, for the chemical body, it was a devastating effect if you looked at the disservices. And the subsequent events, the last 50 years, have borne that out.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a tough time for the chemical body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Elvis and Fellini, obsolesce, they become popular art form. Would you say Elvis is acoustic for the ear and Fellini is acoustic for the eye?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So acoustic space becomes popular art form of TV being the...
The tactile TV being the ground. And everybody thought McLuhan was talking about the oral culture, but that oral culture was just retrieved as content.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis, Fellini, all kinds of things, and jazz are the semi-oral culture. It's actually what McLuhan called audile tactile.
Jazz comes in earlier with the radio. The radio actually comes in earlier than TV. You actually don't have radio.
Did you say jazz comes in with radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's swing
yeah.
jazz.
Yeah, but that's in the 20s. I mean, TV, talking...
No, swing is in the 30s. But the interesting thing is what comes in the 50s? A different kind of jazz, cool jazz, Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And there's going to be a different kind of jazz in the 60s under the computer satellite effect. That's John Coltrane.
Right.
That's the free jazz. But the jazz in each decade is different, very
yeah.
different.
You don't specifically have the words radio and movies above the line in the Global Village, but you're saying that that's all rolled into the electronic revolution.
Yeah, the electronic revolution is actually the electric revolution of telephone, cars, radio, movies,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Airplanes, all that is the electrification of the first half of the 20th century.
Right.
So it's the last phase. It's a consolidation of the Global Village.
Yeah, and we get we actually get the initial impulse of the electronic revolution and the industrial revolution with the telegraph.
Yeah, yeah. So the Global Theater period is a floating Global Village.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It takes off and fragments and breaks up.
Yeah.
And then you have the counterculture, the baby boomers from the West traveling all over the world. McLuhan called that the international motley.
Motley.
Yeah, that's because they're all trying to be actors and costume clowns in the global theater.
Mm-hmm. And then something that's actually not indicated on the chart, but is actually very powerful and important, is the whole effect of advertising, which comes in with the radio and is even heightened up with the television. I don't see that as a variable or a factor here.
Yeah, this is done by Bob Marshall. This ain't perfect, this chart, but he might have that included in mixed corporate media. But you'd have to ask him. But basically, yeah, he's looking at form. He's not a sophisticated McLuhanite.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty mechanical, the way it's laid out. Each phase follows almost the very syndrome that McLuhan was accused of, being a technological determinist, which McLuhan said he wasn't. Bob Marshall's putting that kind of style on this historical tableau.
Right.
It's just mechanical.
Right.
Not on the left side, but on the right side, you got tribe is archetype, and then village is archetype, then town, then city, and ghetto is family, tribe, village, town.
Mm-hmm.
So the so in the computer phase, when it's the ground, then television is the art form, but there are two phases of television. This is pretty clever by Bob Marshall. Black and white TV, which is very different in effect from color TV.
Yeah. And when does color TV come in? Like in the around 60, 1960?
65. I mean, in a popular level by the mid-60s, but it's been around, I think, since 59, 60 for a few homes, wealthy people or whatever who had it.
Yeah.
But the you have in the black and white TV period, which is the 50s, it's the content, the technological art form of the 60s computer phase. And who represents on the highbrow level is Norman Mailer. And who is the popular art form is the Beatles, which replays 50s rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
sped up with the rhythms and style innovations of the 60s. They become an innovation in themselves. So the second half of the 60s is color TV as an art form, and that's highbrow culture as expressed by Marshall McLuhan, and the popular art form is the psychedelia.
Yeah.
So the intense...
Although Marshall never took psychedelics, did he?
No, but he wrote about them very intelligently. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
He did a review of Masters and Houston's varieties of psychedelic experience, which is pretty interesting.
Hmm.
He thought of taking LSD, but his friends recommended, Barry Nevin recommended that it might be hard for him because he just had that the longest brain surgery in history.
Oh, yeah.
So he wasn't exactly well, so.
Yeah. It's hard to say if he could be, you know, really precise in his critique of psychedelics without ever having tried them.
Well, no. He always told his students that if you want to get LSD without the drug effect, you do Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
And he believed that Finnegan's Wake was a real, and if you explored your sensory modalities like a true artist that he claimed to be, and then you already did the psychedelic trip.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to say in the late 60s that literate, numbed people, unaware, motivated somnambulists needed to take LSD to break up their rigid, visual space-conditioned sensory life. And just to tune in a bit to the multi-sensuous life of the second half of the 20th century. And he said, okay, that's good. They tune into the present, but they're still hypnotized by the present effect. So it's actually, the psychedelic effects would just be working on the chemical brain, or if you believe it, the chemical or the astral body. That's just the body. McLuhan was dealing with the collective effect of the mixed corporate media environment of television, computer, and satellite on the whole world. Now, to perceive that accurately, you got to be pretty, in quote, psychedelic. That's why he wrote the best reviews of William Burroughs. Because
mm-hmm.
he didn't have to be a junkie to understand what Burroughs was going through. Because he saw that the whole culture was on junk.
Yeah.
So it's a perceptual training that McLuhan had developed that, you know, the psychedelics might not have had any effect on him.
Yeah. Now, he thought Burroughs was a dangerous character, didn't he?
Yeah, because he merged with the psychedelic culture. You see, in a sense, the highbrow art form is an anti-environment to a superiority complex to the popular art form.
Mm-hmm.
So he was an anti-environment intellectually to the Beatles and psychedelia.
Who?
McLuhan.
Yeah.
He also, in relation to Norman Mailer, too. You know, you have the famous debates between McLuhan and Mailer.
Mm-hmm.
So now what becomes the popular archetype that people think they are living in and comfortable with and feel like they're the owner of, user as monarch of, as he says underneath popular archetype? Well, everybody started traveling around the planet in the 60s. It was their new home.
Yeah.
And were unaware of the discarnate of traveling they were doing 24/7 through radio and TV.
Yeah. It was by 67 we actually had the image of the planet from the first
spaceships. That was in 69.
Yeah.
The Whole Earth Catalog was Stuart Brand. He's the one who came up with that idea.
Right.
And he'd been part of the Ken Kesey's Merry Pranksters, you know, doing a lot of LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got involved with the computer culture.
Mm-hmm.
So the political syndrome of that period was the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
And what is the ghetto? The nation. That's when you start having the burning down of American cities.
Hmm. What cities were burning down?
Detroit, Watts.
Yeah.
New York, all kinds of cities. I mean, when Martin Luther King was assassinated in April 1968, I think there was like 30 cities. Well, you know, not the whole cities, but there were riots and burnings in
right.
many cities.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty... no wonder Herbert Hoover or J. Edgar Hoover went paranoid.
Mm.
I mean, there's civil war going on.
Yeah. So to say JFK's assassination is a symptom is to imply that it was inevitable that the first TV president would be assassinated.
Right, and that it's a programmed environment. If the president gets on an agenda that violates the secret tetrad managers, mm-hmm. which is programming the whole planet, then, and remember, the nation is a fake situation after World War II. It's a hologram. The popular mind thinks it's living in the nation, but the nation is actually a programmed image. And
well, we have what international corporate rule by that time.
Yeah, and what McLuhan called the establishment. He said the establishment killed Kennedy because Kennedy tried to change the power structure.
So this is what they would have called the Illuminati in the secret circles is now in control of the planet. Or what you
said they used to. It's what they do call. People now talk about the Illuminati.
Right.
Now is the term for the secret government of the 50s.
Yeah. Now, is this prior to the Secret Council of Ten?
No, Secret Council of Ten was basically started in the 19th century, even though it went back. Now, we're going to see a bit of that in the other chart. We'll go into that in the top-down
yeah.
chart.
Okay.
But technically, the Secret Council of Ten was formed in the 40s after World War II, and that was the satellite or solar government.
Mm.
So the solar government is running the planet. That's why it's a global theater. McLuhan says the satellite brings in the global theater. The satellite starts at 57. So Solar Council, Secret Council of Ten, is anticipating that. And you're seeing, this is what you will see, that in the second chart...
Wait a minute, we're still in the computer phase?
Yeah.
So how do we get the solar out of that? I thought that comes in with the satellite.
Right, but the satellite goes up in 57, that's Sputnik. But the satellite does not become an environment until there are many satellites.
Right.
And that's in the early 60s, once the Americans start sending Telstar and all kinds of satellites up there. So it's growing through.
It's not accurate to say that the solar government has displaced the nation and the planet in the computer phase.
No, they start doing it in the 20s. The global village. Remember, the solar government, as you'll see on the tiny note chart, is anticipating these things by decades.
The solar government?
Yeah.
I thought the solar government was... they're called the solar government because they're operating in the space orbiting the planet, which doesn't come in until we get a satellite.
Right. But do you think they're going to wait until the satellite goes up? They anticipated this.
They anticipated the satellite?
Yeah, you will see in the Android Memes and Anachrony Diaries my father telling me various things of what was happening by 53. You read the diaries closely. And they're in order now, so you can go to Epes' contribution, where you put the whole diaries in chronological and go right now to 1952, 53, and see what my father was telling me.
Hmm. Okay.
Oh, that's the, you'll see that in a tiny note chart. In the,
how
in
could
the,
they have imagined the satellite 100 years before we got one?
Well, Arthur Clarke started writing about the satellite in about 1945.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And how early did they start planning for the solar government?
Well, the solar government is the improvement of the world government, rides on the back. So the world government is happening in the first half of the 20th century. Now, during World War II, they ain't waiting around to see how it turns out. They're making sure it turns out the way they want it to go, or they're thinking decades ahead. That's, what do you think science fiction's for?
Yeah.
You know, H.G. Wells, Jules Verne.
Right.
People, these think tanks around the solar government are not sitting around blindly waiting to see what happens. They plan 100 years ahead.
Right.
So, and I should say it's more in the formula chart.
Yeah.
The effects preceding causes, where it shows the outline of the intelligence agencies. You'll see that on the other chart that I made that the tiny note chart comes out of.
Right.
That's, I'm talking about the what's called the Bob Dobbs formula chart.
Right.
It goes back from to 1750.
Right.
It shows the effects preceding the causes and the intelligence agencies under the category HCE.
Right.
But we'll get into that later. So the
now, another thing I'm surprised here is that the UFO is never mentioned, and the UFO becomes a factor in science fiction and the late UFO. Huge UFO sightings around the world in 47.
But this is Bob Marshall's work.
Yeah, okay.
He's basically figuring out McLuhan.
Yeah, okay.
He's applying the simple pattern that the new environment turns an old environment into an art form.
Right.
So he laid out all the different kinds of art forms.
Right.
That's basically what this chart is that McLuhan pattern made linear, chronological, over 3,000 years, you could say.
Right. So we went past, we're pretty much done for today, unless you want to wrap it up, and then we'll continue with the satellite and the second coming on our next talk.
Well, let me just, we can go a little longer, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little longer. I don't want the MP3 file to get too big.
Oh, okay. But just, so anybody can look at this chart and see. Under the so the division of the computer phase between black and white TV as an art form and then color TV following as art form. Then you get into the satellite phase, which is going to go around and turn all these previous environments into an art form. So you get a few more phases. You actually have change happening faster.
Mm-hmm.
So you have punk rock and new wave, Saturday night, that would be radio stuff. And beginning of video stuff, and then Saturday Night Live was a major phenomenon in terms of presenting the news, like the Daily Show is presented today. Makes fun of the news. News is fantasy, and the effect of cults. And then you have the Club of Rome, which is the world government that LaRouche railed against. The Club of Life. That was LaRouche's anti-answer to the Club of Rome, which McLuhan called the Club of Ruin. And then you have the beginning of genetic engineering. As now, these are all the Club of Rome, Club of Life, genetic engineering are a new form of highbrow art form. It's the brain trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's think tanks, right?
Right.
Mailer and McLuhan are like the last individuals. And then the computer becomes art form. Mixed corporate media is an art form. What does the people? What do people think they're the monarch of the solar system? And that's the. Star Wars and Star Trek movies of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Star Trek starts in the late 60s, and then Star Wars comes out in 77. You have the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and the planet becomes a ghetto. Everybody thinks it's polluted. And they're looking at the biological organism known as Earth and seeing that's polluted and not noticing the information pollution. And the political syndrome is Watergate, where a president gets impeached, which was a pretty dramatic event. He's threatened to be impeached and has to resign. Now, the second coming is an interesting situation.
You know, I should end this session and then begin a new session, because we could go another, 20 minutes on.
All right, well, let's stop there, and we'll pick up with the second coming.
Okay.
But it's pretty easy once you understand the pattern how to read this chart. And so one has to look at and study it and put their own content, Baroque flourishes inside it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the basic pattern is an illustration of the bottom-up effects of McLuhan.
Right.
The bottom-up effects system that McLuhan developed.
Right.
It's a formula.
Right.
Okay?
Okay. So I'm going to just hit stop.